You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Cheese State University. Cheese State University was created for dedicated cheese professionals seeking to deepen their knowledge, sharpen their skills, and build connections. Join them in the Ivy League of cheese education at cheesestateuniversity.com.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Katayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every day in the supermarket, but what is pyeong sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what is exactly are they? Japanese food is so mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. My guest today is Takashi Sato, who is eighth generation family member of Sanjirushi Jozo in Mie Prefecture, and he's also the president of Sanjay International in Virginia in the U.S. And Sanjirushi Jozo has been making soy sauce and miso since 1804. And in 1978, the company decided to expand its business to the U.S., Now, 45 years later, Sanjay is one of the most familiar soy sauce brands in the U.S., and you may have seen its label at Whole Foods Market, for instance. And soy sauce is a quintessential ingredient to Japanese food, but many of us do not know the different types and their unique flavors. So Sanjay specializes in tamari, and which is rare type even in Japan. And also unknown is the fact that precious tradition of fermented food production has been declining in Japan, and Takashi is very much concerned about the situation. And that is why he created the Hakko Hub, which aims to revitalize artisanal fermented food industry. So today we'll discuss the diverse types and flavors of soy sauce, what exactly tamari soy sauce is, how Takashi's unique product line can help people with allergies, and his efforts to revive the traditional fermentation businesses in Japan, and much, much more. But before we start, Japanese is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japanese. Please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start a conversation with Takashi Sato. Takashi Sato, sorry. Hello, Takashi. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me today.
So this is exciting. Whenever I see your tamari products, I go to Whole Foods Market, and it's delicious. So I've been really excited about the show today. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So to get to know you first, where you're from and what did you eat when you grew up?
Well, I was born and raised in Japan, and I remember that we mainly ate at home, and my mother cooked mostly Japanese food at home.
I bet, because you're the best soy sauce, so why do you go beyond that, right?
Thank you.
Right. So, and as I said earlier, you are the eighth generation of the traditional soy sauce and miso maker. So what is the history of your family business, including its successful expansion into the U.S. market?
Yeah, just like you mentioned, I explained in the beginning that my family originally founded this company in 1804 in Japan, so 220 years ago. And we expanded to the United States in 1978. And of course, it was not me who did it. It was my father who brought the business to the United States. And why did my father bring the soy sauce business to the U.S.? Initially, it was not intentional. So let me explain the background. Since my father was a second son of the family, he needed to find his own living by himself other than the family business, because only one child can take over the business. So after he graduated from college, he joined a totally different company, which was a Toyota Motor Corporation, the Toyota Motor Vehicle Corporation. And he was assigned to the International Sales Department, and he was in charge of the U.S. market. So at that time, my father came to the U.S. often, but not for soy sauce, but to sell Toyota car. And during his stay in the United States, just like we do now, my father had to take his customers to dinner to entertain them. At that time, he always used Benihana restaurant. I think you know the Benihana, that it's a teppanyaki style restaurant. And the reason why my father always went to Benihana was because the founder of Benihana, Mr. Rocky Aoki, he was a classmate of my father at high school in Japan.
Oh, wow.
That's why. It's a small world. And so in Benihana, as you know, that the chef uses soy sauce when he cooks beef or chicken or whatever. And my father was surprised to find that many Americans enjoy the meat flavored with soy sauce. And he thought that selling Toyota car is a very exciting job, but selling soy sauce in the United States might be more exciting. So he quit the job at Toyota and setting up the soy sauce importing office in the US. That was 1978. And in 1987, we built a factory in Richmond, Virginia, and started producing soy sauce from the very scratch. That is our history.
Amazing. Wow. So it makes sense. And he has a global experience. And it really explains the company's success. So, and yourself, after graduating from your college, you worked for a big corporation for 6 years, and you joined your family business, like your father. So then immediately after that, you moved to the U.S. and became in charge of Sanjay International in Virginia in 2001. So why did you choose to work in the U.S.?
Basically, the soy sauce market in the U.S. looked very attractive to me. Because the soy sauce market in Japan is kind of matured and at the same time, very conservative. And on the other hand, the soy sauce market in the U.S. is not only still expanding, but also seems to be very changing a lot. For example, there are many different types of soy sauce in the market. And also, it is exciting to see that people from many different countries around the world are using soy sauce in their own cuisine. That is also very interesting to me. That's why.
Wow. Yeah, it must be really exciting because I think the Japanese food be increasingly becoming popular. So I think there are more opportunities. People are more curious, even more than now, to like increasingly growing interest into Japanese food. So that's very interesting, right? So then I believe when you came to the U.S., the Kikkoman brand was already dominating the market. Of course, that's a big corporation. So how did you manage to penetrate the market without being a big company like Kikkoman?
Yeah, exactly. Kikkoman was already giant when we came to the United States. So yes, it was big challenge for us to compete with the Kikkoman at that time too. And in conclusion, there was one big encounter for my father in the beginning, which ended up becoming a big help for us to avoid direct competition with the Kikkoman. And it was a hippie people. It was the hippie people. And it was 1970s when my father came to the United States. So the hippie movement was still very active. And these hippie people were originally people who liked their natural food because they didn't like anything artificial. So being impressed by those movements, my father decided to make a soy sauce for them, hippies. That means they are organic, no preservative, no chemicals. And at the time, the natural food market itself was very, very small, but that expanded a lot later. And the hippie community contributed greatly to that grows. For example, Whole Foods, just like you mentioned, it is the biggest natural food chain in the U.S., and they are headquarters in Austin, Texas, which is a hippie town, or Wild Oats, once the number two company in the industry. They were headquartered in Boulder, Colorado, which is also another hippie town. So to the return to the story, yes, in order to avoid direct competition with Kikkoman, my father worked with the hippies, and it turned out it was a success. But what I wanted to emphasize here is that the quality of soy sauce Kikkoman makes is also very high and very good. So I'm not saying that we could gain our share because our quality is better than Kikkoman. That is not what I'm saying. Both Sanjay and Kikkoman are making good soy sauce. But what I'm saying is here is that we could gain our current share by choosing a different market from the Kikkoman. That is why.
Right. So the Kikkoman probably went from the entrance of the Japanese food, but it's kind of like your entrance was in a lifestyle kind of.
Yes.
Different entrance.
Yes.
Right. Interesting. So what is your mission now as the president of Sanjay International? Because it's hippie people. That's natural nature of your product was appeal, but now everybody's talking about, the healthier, sustainable natural food. So probably your mission has been shifting over time since you came here, right?
Well, yeah, but it's still simple. As a president of Sanjay, my mission is still to grow this company by providing good product to the consumers in the United States. That is my main mission.
Okay. All right, I'm going to get into the details of your products, including Tamai. So we'll take a quick break here, and then I'll discuss those fun stuff later in a moment. So please stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Cheese State University. Cheese State University was created for dedicated cheese professionals seeking to deepen their knowledge, sharpen their skills, and build connections.
It feels like a gift to be able to give this gift to people, because I know that from my own experiences, I know how valuable, consolidated, incredible training resources are.
They offer an in-depth education on all things cheese, as well as an active network for peer support and career development.
You can pop over to the Quad, which is our social networking and engagement app. And so that's a really fun and dynamic aspect of Cheese State University.
Cheese State's three-part course is designed for seasoned pros and entry-level mongers alike, and covers all the skills one needs to perform on the cheese counter.
The structure of Cheese State University is all based on the Cheese State University Field Guide. And that is a three-volume resource. It's all digital, online.
At the end of the course, students will be ready to ace the field guide assessment and earn their Cheese State Scholar Certificate.
Another resource is a video series where we tackle sort of like these thornier questions that you can get on the cheese counter, like what is rennet and like why is this cheese so expensive and can pregnant people even eat cheese?
At Cheese State, you're among experts, you're among scholars, you're among cheese lovers, and most importantly, you are a monger. Join them in the Ivy League of Cheese Education at cheesestateuniversity.com.
And welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats on Heritage Radio Network, HRN. I'm your host, Akiko Teyama, and my guest today is Takashi Sato, who is the 8th generation family member of Sanjurushi Jozo in Mie Prefecture and the president of Sanjay International in Virginia in the U.S., which produces tamari-style soy sauce. So first, let's talk about soy sauce. So soy sauce is a quintessential ingredient of Japanese dishes, but many of us outside of Japan don't know that there are different types of soy sauce, and each one has very unique flavors. So could you give us what types of soy sauce exist?
Yeah, in Japan, there are five types of soy sauce in Japan, and basically the difference between them is the ratio of soybean to wheat. And basically, the more soybean, the stronger the umami and darker the color. And the more wheat, the more sharp and lighter in color. Yes.
Okay, so what are the names of these five different types?
Oh, the name of those five types is the Koikuchi type. And this is the most typical soy sauce in Japan, including the Kikuma mix, and Usukuchi type, and Tamari type, and Saishikomi type, and Shiro type. And in the US, out of these five types of soy sauce, only two types of soy sauce might be available in the typical market, which is Koikuchi type soy sauce, which is made from 50% soy and 50% wheat. And this is Kikuman type soy sauce. And the other one is Tamari type, which is we make.
Right. So I heard that Koikuchi is, maybe it's outdated data, but it was 80% of what people consume in Japan. And right? It's the majority. And I mean, Usukuchi, Shiro Shoyu, those things are kind of regional. I think in the Kyoto Kaisek chefs who prefer the colors of the ingredients not to be brown, they tend to have lighter color, those shiro shoyu. And it's just the style, and you can really utilize different kinds of soy sauce depending on your purpose. And also, I think, isn't shiro shoyu saltier despite the color? It doesn't look so salty, but it's saltier. And and also, what's saishikomi shoyu? Show your soy sauce.
Oh, yeah. It is very difficult to explain it a little bit, especially in English. But if I translate it directly in English, it is said that double brewed soy sauce. When we make soy sauce, we add brine to the soybean and wheat during fermentation. But what they do is that they add soy sauce instead of brine into the soybean and wheat in the beginning of the soy in the beginning of fermentation. So it's gonna be very thick soy sauce at the end. For example, if you make coffee at home, you add hot water over the over the coffee bean, right? But please imagine that if you add coffee instead of hot water over coffee beans, it's going to be very thick coffee at the end. So that's what they do in the soy sauce factory. So yeah, it is very unique and very thick. And I love the taste too.
Right. So, but who uses the saishikomi shoyu? Because the majority of our listeners probably never heard of saishikomi shoyu. So
yeah, it might be a little difficult to find it in the United States, but there are one brand I can recommend is the Yamaroku soy sauce. They are making soy sauce in a very small island in Japan, and they're fermenting their soy sauce in the very traditional way in the udon tank, in other words, kyoke in Japanese. And actually, they were introduced even on Netflix in the United States. So they are getting popular. And you can find it on Amazon, actually. Yes, actually, if you type soy sauce on Amazon.com, this Yamaroku soy sauce is ranked usually number one. So it's a little expensive, but it's worth trying it.
Right, because of course, instead of salt, already made soy sauce is the product, I mean, the ingredient. So, right, but I heard, I think I had a saishikomi shoyu at a sushi restaurant, and because it's thicker and kind of more viscous, it was great with just sticking to sashimi. And I mean, it's one of those things you may want to try, my listeners, if you go to Japan. I mean, by the way, soy sauce in Japanese is shoyu. So shoyu or soy sauce is like an interchangeable word. It's just interesting how the texture can be different, and also the level of umami can be different, right? The most soybeans, do you think, are more umami in,
right, yes.
Mm-hmm. in the products, right? Yeah, so our listeners, you know, the umami is the fifth taste after salty, sweet, sour, bitter. And the umami is, it's very important. It's a key element of soy sauce. But by the way, what makes a good soy sauce, in your opinion, depending on, of course, different types, but in general, what makes a good soy sauce?
All the process of the soy sauce making is very important for the quality at the end. But the, I'd say most important part of the for the quality is the very beginning, the koji making. Koji is the kind of koji is the name of the mold, which is very unique to the fermented food in Japan. Not only for soy sauce, but also for miso or sake. Koji is kind of key element, key ingredient for those fermented foods. So in order to grow this koji mold, it's very kind of sophisticated and very difficult to maintain the quality. So yes, that part is the most important part for their good quality.
Right. Yeah, we had a koji spore providers a couple of times on the show, but koji is such delicate.
Okay.
Yeah, so it is everything delicious in Japanese cuisine tend to be made with koji mold. So yeah, and what I heard often from sake producers, they can't eat strong bacteria carrying food like natto because koji is delicate. The natto is so potent that they can kill. So this is a key question. So your family business has been focused on tamari soy sauce. So what is the difference of tamari, and what's special about, you know, production, ingredients, and taste, and how you use it?
Yeah, tamari is famous for its umami flavor. It's because tamari uses high percentage of soybeans, which contains much protein. And this protein is broken down into amino acid during the fermentation period. Then we recognize this amino acid as a umami. That is why tamari has a strong umami taste.
Mm-hmm. Right. So in other words, it's, so the concentrated umami and texture is thicker right. too?
It's texture is thicker too, yes. Because, it's a little bit detailed, but there are, in the beginning of the fermentation, you add brine in the tank. But the amount of brine you add to the tank is much less in tamari. So that's why texture itself is very thicker than typical soy sauce.
So how do you use a tamari in the best way? In cooking or certain kind of dishes?
I'm the tamari manufacturer. My wife used tamari for everything. if I would say that because it is strong umami flavor, it may be good with the strong flavored ingredients such as a meat or beef dishes. And this is what I always tell people, that your choice of wine might be good, might be a good indicator. Like you choose wine between red or white, depending on what you eat. And tamari might be good with the dishes that are good with red wine. So that might be a good indicator.
Interesting. Right. And I heard that because of the rich umami and texture, it can mitigate the smell, too strong smell of certain, you know, I don't know, like lamb or also the fish, I heard.
Yeah.
So, it's interesting. It's very versatile, but if you want, you can choose in a certain way. And also, I think I had tamari with nice, thick, denser tofu.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's not the silken, but it's the thicker one. And I think the texture of both work together and in your mouth. So, yeah, it's a very interesting soy sauce. I thought it was that there's so many things you can play with. And and of course, umami, it's the guaranteed umami that people look for in soy sauce. So,
exactly.
Right. And also your tamari products are gluten-free, but not all tamari is not gluten-free. So why is that?
Yeah, you are right that the majority of tamari made in Japan is made with wheat, actually. And the reason for this is the aroma, I think. The unique aroma of soy sauce is derived from their wheat. And Japanese people in general love the aroma of soy sauce. So no matter what type of soy sauce they may use, they expect a certain level of soy sauce aroma, even on tamari too. So that is why tamari manufacturers also use a small amount of wheat in order to give it a little bit aroma. That's why I think, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Probably I didn't realize that. I was looking for that kind of flavor. It's like a sweeter additional sweetness.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, that is true. That because wheat contains a lot of starch, which is broken down into sugar during fermentation. So that makes sense that if you add wheat, the total flavor get a little bit sweeter. Yes, you are right.
Interesting. And is it? I also heard people add wheat because it makes it easier to ferment. Is that true also?
You know, a lot of things about soy sauce. Sounds like I don't have to explain, but you are right that actually, if you use the wheat, the fermentation period can get a little bit shorter because the starch can be fermented easier than the protein. So, if you use wheat, yes, it will help the fermentation also too. Yes.
Right. So you're making your work harder, but there is a benefit of gluten-free. So, I think a lot of people nowadays are aware of some gluten effects, negative effects of gluten. So are there many customers that they prefer, because your products are gluten-free, that's their choice of products, I guess, right?
And this is why in Japan they add wheat normally, because in Japan not many people are looking for the gluten-free product, or not, they're not people who are, gluten is not that the issue for Japanese people that much. But in the US, yes, just you said, there are a lot of people who need to or who want to avoid gluten for many reasons. So yes, it's getting bigger and bigger for gluten-free demand, so that tamari is good for that thing.
Right. And I was perusing your website and on your product page, I found a product called No Soy Tamari, soy-free and gluten-free, which is made without soybeans, and it's also gluten-free. So, I'm aware that soybeans can cause allergies. So it sounds like an amazing product, but what are the ingredients of it, and what does it taste like?
Yeah. Our non-soy tamari is made from the green pea. And this non-soy tamari, the flavor of non-soy tamari might be a little bit sweeter than regular tamari soy sauce. Of course, it doesn't mean that we add sugar. We do not add sugar. And what is happening here is that the green pea has more starch than tamari does. So this starch is broken down into sugar during fermentation process. So that makes it sweeter.
Right. Well, what I hear, peas, green peas, this is my kind of thing. So I probably purchase it after this. Yeah, then the sweetness and this. Good.
Yeah. Good. Actually, We tried many ingredients to make their non-soy product. And one of their most interesting ingredients you may think is that hemp. We use hemp for but it didn't go well, so that we had to give up. But yeah.
Interesting. What was the reason it didn't ferment well, or some kind of different flavors?
The taste becomes so, how to say, vegetable. I mean, the greenish, it's very difficult to explain the unique or a little bit strange flavor, but it was not doing well. So the funny thing is that we have the bigger laboratory in our company in Japan. So I thought that they can make it better even with the hemp product, hemp ingredient. So actually, we sent the hemp to our parent company in Japan, but it ended up stopped at the custom because we are not allowed to use hemp in Japan. We were brave enough to send it, but I just forgot that it was prohibited.
Right. Well, it sounds like a sustainable ingredient, right?
I thought it's a good thing, but yeah.
Mm. Well, I'll keep me posted on new ingredients because I'm so curious.
Some point in the future.
Yeah. So, all right. And why do you think your products became so popular in America? I mean, going back again, it's originally a Japanese flavor, that soy sauce, but really in a big part of the Whole Foods shelf, I think it's a huge success. So what do you think?
Yeah, I think over the time, I think people are choosing healthier. There are certain people who wanted to choose healthier option more and more, not only that being gluten-free, but also we were, for example, first soy sauce in the US to be certified organic, or the first soy sauce to be certified non-GMO. So when people wanted to choose healthier option, our brand might be the number one. And in addition, I believe that the growing awareness of the taste of umami has contributed to the preference for tamari, since it contains a lot of umami. So this is another reason, I think.
That makes sense. The image of soy sauce being healthy, it's not fatty for sure. But I think what I heard is umami enhances satisfaction after you eat something. Mm-hmm. And unlimited craving of sugar or salt can be a problem. If you have rich umami in food, your brain captures that signals that you had enough, you're satisfied. So in that sense, I think umami-rich food like tamari is very healthy as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yes.
Okay, and how has the U.S. soy sauce market changed in terms of the palate of customers since you moved here?
There was a time, I think, when people said that as far as it was black in color and salty, it was good enough. But it was like a decade ago when there was a time like that. But as I mentioned earlier, people have come to appreciate the many characteristics of soy sauce, including the umami or aroma. So yeah, it is getting changing a lot.
Mm. Right, and also of course, I think Japanese cuisine can be called a part of American diet, especially, you know, ramen boom arrived. So it's
I see. Yeah.
Right. So soy sauce in every cabinet and pantry of American households. It used to be what that could happen in the future, but then I think it's actually happening. So that's great. As I said earlier, you started the Hakko Hub to revitalize the traditional fermented product industry. So what is Hakko Hub and what's your mission?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. HakuHub.com is a website that provides information on fermented food. And actually, our company is paid for its operation, but we do not promote our product in any way. It is a website that provides knowledge on a variety of products. We do not offer such as mirin, shiokoji, miso sake, or others. And we started this website because I wanted to support small manufacturers in Japan because there are many manufacturers who make very good fermented food in Japan, but unfortunately, the Japanese market is getting smaller and smaller, and the business environment is getting tougher every year. For example, in Japan, at this point, there are 1,100 soy sauce manufacturers in Japan, in that small country. So that sounds many, but when I was born in 1972, there were 6,000 soy sauce manufacturers. So you can tell that certain amount of soy sauce manufacturers are out of business every year. And that's many. And it is not happening not only soy sauce industry, but also miso or sake or any traditional fermented food industry having the same issue. And there are many reasons for this change. For example, one of them is that what we eat is changing. For example, when I was a small child, I grew up on the Japanese food. For example, we ate natto for breakfast, soba noodle for lunch, and hot pot for dinner, maybe. And all of them use soy sauce. On the other hand, today the little kid eat Kellogg cornflakes for breakfast and McDonald's for lunch and pasta for dinner. And I want to tell you that I love all of them, and my kids loved all of them too. And I'm not blaming any of them, but the reality is that they do not use soy sauce in it. Therefore, their soy sauce consumption per person in Japan has decreased by half over the past 50 years. And additionally, Japan's population is also shrinking. And I learned that by the end of this century, the population will decrease by 40%. And of course, the food industry depends on the number of stomach. The impact is significant. So, yeah, therefore, if there is opportunity for people in foreign countries to use those fermented food from Japan more and more, and then export from Japan can be increased, which will help small manufacturing in Japan at the end. But however, in order to people in foreign countries, including in the US, to use those fermented food, we must first increase the awareness level of those fermented food. That is why I have started using this website to provide more information.
Right. So, I mean, the hakko means fermentation, and top chefs like René Redzepi and all those, you know, people inspired a lot of home cooks and chefs to use fermented foods, which is good and good for your health. Your microbiome increases, and it's so much better than, you know, like processed food, and probably you can reduce your health care cost as well by eating the fermented foods naturally. So, it's amazing. Your website, it's like a learn section. You have a detailed information about soy sauce, mirin, miso, koji, sake, and hakko itself, and also recipes and DIY. You can have DIY kits. So you can learn a lot about hakko fermentation. Things in English, of course. So, listeners, it's HakkoHub, HakkoHub, B.com, HakkoHub.com. Right? And so what are the main activities to support the declining fermentation industry at the HakkoHub? It's like a writing-based?
In addition to providing information, we try to provide opportunity to experience as much as possible. And so far, there are three main ones. The first one is the DIY opportunities. We offered free make your own tamari kit for people to make their own tamari at home. And we made about 900 set and sent them all over the world. And I think you can understand everything better when you make it from the scratch by yourself. And the second one is that last year, I organized fermentation tour. We visited 11 fermentation brewery in Japan. And for this tour, about 30 people are joined from the all over the world, mainly from the United States. And the reason why I organized this tour is because if you actually visit the factory and talk with the producer and taste the product on the site, you will love the product. And it will also make you attached to the brand. And that is why I organized it. And the last one is that I held an open house at my factory last year too. Our factory is located in Richmond, Virginia, where we make soy sauce from the scratch. And we will have another open house this September. So if you have a chance, please come and join us.
Right. Well, so what's amazing is that you kind of promote your competitors in the same industry.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, it's a smart, very wise thing to me, because bigger the pie, people get more interest in actual products. But what you're doing is really important, because it's time is ticking, right? Because all those artisanal producers are aging, and many of them are family businesses. So we can't wait for another 10, 20 years. They're going to shrink. So
correct.
Yeah. So Takai-san, you are doing is something I think really valuable. And hope a listener can join what you do and just visit the website to learn more about soy sauce and other fermented products to support the declining business, the industry in Japan. So how do you predict the future of the global soy sauce and fermented product market?
From conclusion there, I believe that it will grow even more. And this is something you might not know, that the soy sauce is already the third biggest condiment category in the U.S. after ketchup and mayonnaise.
Mm-hmm.
It is amazing. And it is mainly, of course, the Kikkoman's contribution. But I believe that it's going to become more and more common in the U.S. And I think similar trend will happen in other countries too. So yes, it will grow even more.
That's great. Like Japanese sake, which has been a declining industry, but the overseas market is really exceedingly doing well. So I hope it's going to happen in other artisanal fermented product industry too. So what are your plans and dreams?
Well, my dream is that I hope that my tamari will expand their range of your cooking. But I'm not saying that tamari is always the best. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that if you change your favorite seasoning to tamari from time to time, you might be able to enjoy your meal in a new way. And for example, that barbecue. Yes, I love the barbecue sauce for the barbecue, but the tamari might be good once in a while. Or if you live in the UK, fish and chips is one of the major menu. And I love the vinegar for the fish and chips, but tamari might be good once in a while. or if you live in Germany, the sausage is my favorite. When I visit Germany, and the mustard is always good with their sausage, but the tamari might be good once in a while too. So yeah, I'd be happy if you use our tamari like that.
Mm. And also soy sauce and tamari and other condiments are not mutually exclusive, right? Because I think adding umami with soy sauce can really make everything kind of deeper and more satisfying, as we discussed earlier. And umami has an interesting nature to enhance sweetness and saltiness and then mitigate the bitterness and the sourness. So satisfaction guaranteed if you add some tamari to its existing condiments like barbecue rub or even mayonnaise. It really is surprising. It's like a couple drops changes the whole game.
Yes, yes, yes. Exactly.
Right? I'm getting hungry now. So, all right. So where can our listeners buy your products? Of course, at Whole Foods Market, I keep seeing it, but where else can we buy your Sanjay label products?
Oh, yeah. I think all of the natural food market, not only Whole Foods Market, but also like Sprouts if you go to the natural food market, yes, you can find ours definitely. And also our website, you can get our product from there. From our website.
So the your website is sanjay-j.com. Sanjay, sanjay-j.com. Okay. Right. And the other social media, anything else you want to tell us for updates?
I started my Instagram 2 years ago, and I'm enjoying my Instagram, and like I could communicate with many people from around the world about fermentation. So that, if you visit my Instagram, I'd be happy.
Okay, so your Instagram account, it's Sanjay. No, it's not the Sanjay.
My Instagram is Takashi _ Tamari.
Okay, right.
Takashi. TAKASHI _ Tamari.
Okay, great.
Yep.
All right. Mm-hmm. So, keep us posted, and then hopefully you can come back for another new discoveries and updates on Hakkohav and everything else.
Great.
Right. So thank you so much for joining us today, Takashi.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
All right. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@theheritagefoodnetwork.org or kikukatema.com. Japanese is a weekly program and is always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Amin Spenjan, and thanks for listening. I will see you next week. Japanese is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.